Welcome to Calvary Chapel, Wichita. May God richly bless you as you listen to this message.
Can I begin by telling you a story? This one I know is true because I know the people to whom it happened. They've gone to be with the Lord, so I'm free to tell the story. He had been a pastor in this particular church for about 100 years, I think, and they gave him a six-week vacation every year. Well, he and his wife were campers. They weren't tent campers. They had one of these big, heavy-duty pickups that you could just put a unit down in the back, you know. And they'd head out across the U.S. for 6 weeks in that thing. This particular year, when Saturday arrived, they were further away than they had anticipated. He was due back in the pulpit the next morning. It would require that he drive all night long. Well, he drove a couple hours into the night, and he said to his wife, "I can't do it. I'm sleepy." She said, "You've got to." He said, "I can't." She said, "Look, I'm not sleepy. Why don't you let me drive? You get in the back and sleep, and if I get sleepy, maybe you'll be rested by then." "Good idea." So they stopped. He got out and got in the back. She got behind the wheel and headed out. Now, normally, he slept in just his undershorts, you know, and he decided that in order to be natural and get good sleep, he may as well be natural, so he took off all of his clothes except his shorts, went into a very deep sleep. Well, after a couple of hours, his wife kind of got, you know, road hypnotized and came up to a crossing on this highway that had a stop sign. Well, this happened to be in Texas, where you could see for 1,000 miles, you know, and if she'd have been a guy, she would have run the thing. But being a woman, she put it into a power stop. Well, it threw him out of bed and woke him up, of course, and in his wooziness, he thought, "Oh, no, she's had a wreck." So he stumbled out the back to see what she had hit. I don't even need to finish this story. And she, hoping she had not awakened him, heads out. No amount of yelling and waving was of any value. She's gone. And here he is, out in the middle of nowhere, in his short. Occasionally a car would come by, zoom. Well, finally the highway patrol came by. They stopped. "Mister, what are you doing out here in the middle of nowhere in your shorts?" "Officer, I'm a pastor." "Sure you are. Touch your nose. You know, walk this line." Well, they determined that he was sober, took him to the station, got him some clothes. He called one of his elders who verified, "Yes, that's my pastor." Somehow they got some money to him, and he was able to charter a light plane and pilot to take him home. Well, he got home before his wife did. But he couldn't get in, so he's sitting there on the front steps waiting for her to arrive. Sure enough, just before dawn, here come the lights of that pickup on their street, turning into the driveway. Well, when the lights fell on him and she saw him, it scared her so bad that rather than hit the brakes, she hit the accelerator. Totally destroyed the garage, just drove right through it, you know. Well, that's the end of the story. Except just a few hours later, he's up preaching, and there's one guy out there that knows. And I wonder if he could keep a straight face. People might have been wondering, why is he giggling? Well, we continue looking at the nature of Jesus. I take you now to Luke chapter 22, at verse 26, write that down, where Jesus said, "He that is greatest must be as the younger." Now, this is a difficult one for us simply because it does not have the meaning today that it did back then. To be the younger in a family now is really certainly of no legal significance. But it was very significant back then. You see, the elder brother got the birthright. What in the world is that? Because we don't do that today. Well, there were two things about this birthright that I want to tell you. First thing is, In getting the birthright, the elder brother had the power, the authority, the name, man. He was, as some would call it today, the blessed child, man. He had it made. Well, the younger, hi, I'm here. Oh, shut up. You know? So I think what Jesus is telling us with this is you're not going to be the big dog on this world. We are pilgrims passing through, folks. This is not our turf. So don't get upset if you can't be in charge of this turf, if the world doesn't like you. They're not going to like you. They're going to make fun of you. Sometimes it'll be open and public. Sometimes it'll be quiet and underhanded because of the new laws that we've got as to civil rights. But, you know, one thing that, and this is a cultural thing that bothers me, is that we really sometimes have come to the conclusion that the U.S. is actually God's country, synonymous with His kingdom. It's not. It's not. But we think if we could just take it over, everything would be sweet. It won't. They've done that in other countries. It was disaster. And it'll be disaster. In fact, we've already had some of the disaster already, you see. We're just not the rulers fit for this world. We're aiming for a much better one where the government will be on His shoulders. Oh, man, I guess I get carried away when I think of that. King Jesus. So, number one on this, don't get upset when the world doesn't like you, and don't think you're going to be top dog in this world. Now, there is a TV evangelist guy who believes that it is our job to take over the world so that we can make it Christian and then Jesus can come back. Well, like I said, there's one big denomination that's already tried that, and they succeeded, only to discover they were as wicked as the rest of the world they took over when that happened. So don't get those kind of dreams in your heart. The best way to change a country is win the people to the Lord. Paul never went into a country to try to take over the country. He just went in to preach Jesus, and so many people got saved that the people who were selling idols, for instance, got mad because they couldn't sell idols anymore. I would much rather have the wicked people picketing us than us picketing the wicked people, simply because we've succeeded so much in getting people saved. That's what changes countries. By the way, if you go to the British Museum, they have quite a bit of that Ephesus temple there where they rioted because Paul had won so many people to the Lord. Anyway, the other thing about being as the younger, the elder brother got the majority of the inheritance. So what I think Jesus is saying with this is travel light. Don't get attached to the things of this world. It's going to burn, you know? Boy, there was a guy in the New Testament that, it's a marvelous story because there are parts of it that we miss. He comes to Jesus, intelligent. He knew who to come to. I'm amazed at where people go for their signals, you know. They hunt these short, fat little gurus who sit with their legs in positions that legs were not intended to go in. And say things like, when one concentrates upon the unknowable, one comes to know that the unknowable cannot be known. Therefore, one now has a transcendental knowledge, because now he knows that the unknowable cannot be known. Therefore, one should meditate upon the sound of one hand clapping. I'm not making this up. And people go away from that thinking, wasn't that brilliant? I mean, I'm missing something here, I'll tell you. But this guy came to the right person, intelligent. He came to Jesus and he asked the right question. Some people ask stupid questions, you know, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? Like God can't figure that out. Stupid question. Should we pay taxes to Caesar? Try not. Can you make a rock so big you can't move it? Stupid question, you know. But this guy asked the right question. Good master, what must I do to inherit eternal life? That's the question, you know. And you know what? The Bible makes an interesting set of comments in here. Jesus gave him just a few of the rules. He seemed to know the ones maybe that troubled this fella the most. He gave them to him. And this guy said, yeah, I know those rules. In fact, I have kept them all. Hey, pretty good. Since my youth. Not only was he intelligent, he was holy. And he had one other thing going for him. He was rich. My kind of man. Loved to have him on my board. Intelligent, holy, and rich. We know him as the rich young ruler. And here's one of the most interesting comments. It says, Jesus loved him. Isn't that something? Jesus wasn't on the attack with this guy. He wasn't thinking, I'm going to slap him around a while. No. He wasn't, I'm going to show him who's boss, you know. Sometimes I think, not for you guys, that our leading cheer is, beat them, bust them, that's our custom. Go, Jesus, go. You know? He loved him. And I hear that. I can hear this. Hey, you know, man, you're doing good. In fact, the only thing I see has got you kind of in bondage is, why don't you just go sell everything you've got, give the money to the poor, then come follow me. Bible says he went away because he had a lot of stuff. Have you checked your garage lately? I have. You know, if he'd have had one bicycle, he'd said, big deal, take it. But he said, sir, I've got 10 million bicycles. Well, how many of those can you ride at once? That's beside the point. I've got 10 million. Now, the rich young ruler went away sad. The apostles were sad. They were probably thinking, why didn't he tell him to sell it and give the money to the Apostolic Evangelistic Association? Help keep us on the air. Jesus was sad. He said, you know, it's harder for a rich man to go to heaven than for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. Man. Now, I think it's harder for anybody to go to heaven than for rich man to go through the, or for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. Did I say rich man to go through the eye of a needle? Same thing. I heard many years ago that the eye of a needle was a gate in the Jerusalem wall, so small a camel could only go through it on his knees with nothing on his back. Isn't that a great illustration? It's just not true. There is not now, nor has there ever been, such a gate in the Jerusalem wall. If you go to Israel and your guide says of a certain place, that they call the eye of a needle, fire him on the spot. He's lying to you. And you don't know how many other times he's lied to you. No, that doesn't fit the Bible. Peter said, well, then it's impossible. But there's never been such a gate in the Jerusalem wall. So when Jesus said a camel through the eye of a needle, he meant a camel through the eye of a needle. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to push a camel through the eye of a needle. It can be done. You just have to grind him up real fine. And as C.S. Lewis says, when you finish, he feels all bloody and strung out. You know. Now, I want you to know, I believe you can have things and make it to heaven. But, you know, I believe we kind of need to view our things the same way Paul the Apostle viewed his things, if I may only paraphrase him slightly. He said, I consider all my things to be dung. You're not offended by that word, are you? Manure. Now, if you can view your things that way, first of all, you won't get too attached. And you won't get too proud. Bet I have more dung than you have. keep my dung in a high dung area. You know, if Jesus were to say to me, hey, Gail, come over here and work for me, am I going to say, I can't come now, Jesus. I'm guarding 100 tons of manure. I'm expecting another load any minute, you know? Well, anyway. Then he says, whoever wants to be great, let him be as the least. Now, these words are in the areas we've already looked at, but I just didn't deal with them until now. Last, as the last. Which doesn't mean I want to be least and last to show you how least and last I am. If I ever say to you, you be first, I'll be last, since I'm the greatest. Get sick right there. Now, these are the things Jesus says about himself in the Gospels. And when I first saw that, I had two reactions to it. I looked at that and I thought, Jesus, I love you now more than I have ever loved you before. There is no one like you. No one. Then I had another reaction. You ever heard of a thing called a carnal nature? Had one once. It rose up and said, come on, Erwin, you can't do this. You're having a rough enough time being a Christian now. Give it up. But then I saw the good news. Now, I'm under contract with God to share good news. So I have to, at this moment, give you some very good news. Now, the first part of the good news is, this is the way Jesus is toward us. You see, you think I'm trying to lay this on you? No, I just want you to see what Jesus is like. This is the way he is toward us. Second thing, Philippians 2:13 says, for it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. In other words, it's God who wants you, who asks you to do his will and then enables you to do his will. In other words, you're God's fault. He takes responsibility for you, you know. I best understood this, oh my, 30-some years ago, man, 37 years ago, where I worked in a place where on Tuesdays and Thursdays, the men of the department would go across the street to a gymnasium during lunch hour and play basketball. Now, basketball is not my best game. I looked a little too much like the ball. And folks, this is true. Sometimes when we'd be choosing up sides, they'd get down to me. And one of them would say, look, we had Erwin last time. It's your turn to have him. You know? So I was playing basketball for the fellowship and the exercise, but there was one guy there. His name was Dave. He was about 6 feet, 30 inches tall. He could play basketball. I loved to get chosen on his team because we would always win. On his team, I only had one job, get the ball to Dave. So I'd bring the ball inbounds and I'd toss it over to Dave and he'd turn around, chiplunk. The other team would go, ah! And they'd miss half of their shots, see? So it'd be my turn again, and now, you know, I'm kind of feeling Mcheerios. So I'll do a few Globetrotter stunts to make you think I know what I'm doing. But if a ball ever got stolen, it would be when I was showing off. But if I still had it, I'd toss it over to Dave, and he'd turn around, chiplunk, and the other guys would go, ah! And I'd say, aren't we good? No, we do it. It was all Dave, you know. Now, folks, that's the way it is in our walk with the Lord. We're on his team. Oh, let me tell you another story in the middle of this story. When I was in high school was when the first big-name sportsmen started becoming Christians. So common now, we hardly pay attention. But it was a novelty back then, and these guys would come by my high school. We'd call an assembly. Now, all the kids that come in, they'd give their testimony, and kids would get saved right and left. It was wonderful. Supreme Court said we couldn't do that anymore. But I remember their hearts were right, but their heads hadn't figured everything out yet. Now, I remember a big football guy said, in football, we have a first team, we have a second team, then we have scrubs. And I thought, that's me, I'm a scrub. But nobody wants to be that, so we go out there and we run 500 miles a day. and we eat 15 beefsteaks an hour. And we put on our pads and run headlong into brick walls to make ourselves tough so we can be on the first team, because nobody wants to be a scrub. Then he applied that spiritually, and that's where he made his mistake. That's the way it is with God. God got a first team, he got a second team, and then he has scrubs. And I thought, that's me. I'm a scrub. But nobody wants to be that. So what we do is we get out there and we go to church 500 times a day. And we read 5,000 scriptures a minute. And we witness to 15,000 people an hour. And we give 150% of our income so we can be on God's first team, because nobody wants to be a scrub. But that's not the way it is with God, folks. He's only got one team. He calls it his body. You see? I would never ask you, is that your first team here? Of course... is what I've got. Well, your position in the body of Christ is unique to you, and without you, we are hobbled. But on his team, you only have one job. Get the ball to Jesus. Jesus said, without me, you can do. How much is nothing? Okay, we got that solved. If I may quote Peter slightly, he said, throwing all the basketballs to Jesus because he scores for you. Remember that verse? All right, so casting all your care on him, he cares for you. Same thing. So I bring the ball inbounds and I toss it over to Jesus and he turns around, chiplunk, and Satan goes, ah! And he misses most of his shots, see. Then I'm kind of feeling my Cheerios, you know? So I bring the ball in that bounds, and I do a few spiritual globetrotter stunts to make, you think I know what I'm doing? Boom, yeah. And if the ball gets stolen, it'll be when I'm showing off. But then if I still have it, I toss it over to Jesus. He turns around, chiplunk. Satan goes, ah! Then I say, aren't we good? No, it's all him. You see, that's the point. This is why we so gladly look at this verse, looking unto Jesus, the author and the abandoner of our faith. No, the author and the finisher of our faith. He who began this good work in you will probably get pretty discouraged after a while and give up. No, will be faithful to complete it, you see. One of my favorite stories, a lot of people believe, and I go along with this, that Michael Jordan was the best basketball player that ever lived. Once in a playoff game, he scored 70 points, man. Unbelievable. One of his teammates scored 2 points. His teammate puts it this way, I'll never forget that game where me and Michael Jordan combined for 72 points. That's kind of the way it is with us and the Lord, you know. He lets us think we had something to do with it. I love it. Well, anyway, I take you now, we got to move fast, man. I take you now to Philippians chapter 2, beginning with verse 5. Now, this is a passage that might have been a song back then. Boy, if so, we really need to put it back to music. It may have been a creed that they said. If so, it's a great creed. Or it may have been that the Lord said, Paul, sit down and write this. However it happened, it was prompted by the Holy Spirit. So Paul writes, let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus. Mind. Has your mind ever failed you? Can't remember? Well, here's the opportunity for a change of mind. Now, if you're going to trade minds with someone, don't trade with me, or you'd be in a heap of trouble. But here's the opportunity to have the mind of Christ. Now, we could have called this nature or heart or attitudes. All of that would work. But the next question becomes, well, what is this mind? What is this heart? What is this nature? What are these attitudes? What is this central core of motivation? To our great benefit, Paul goes on and explains what it is. The only trouble is that next verse. I don't know if you ever read the Bible and come across a verse and you read it and you go, huh? It's okay. I mean, one of the wonderful things my grandfather did for me when I lived with him, he was such a spiritual giant in my life, is sometimes when we'd come to verses and I'd read it, and he was blind by then, but he knew the Bible better than me for sure. And I'd say, what does that mean, Grandpa? He says, I have no idea. Let's go on. You know, and I'm thinking, is that okay? You know? But it is. I mean, you can read a verse and think, I don't understand this, but then there's an old song, we'll understand it better by and by. I believe that. But at any rate, this one's a tough one. Who, though he was in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God? Huh? Well, the NIV, the nearly inspired version, puts it this way. Who, though he was in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. Well, that helps. But what does this mean? Well, I'm going to write this down as two things, because it was two things. And it wasn't take your choice, it was both of these. So I have to write both of them down up here. Who, though he was in the very form of God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, means as, and I'm going to put these as numbers 9 and 10, and you'll see why it fits as we go along. He used no force on us and was not driven by selfish or blind ambition. Let's shorten this to no blind ambition. No force. He could have, you know. He had all the power of the universe coursing through his veins. He could have grabbed us by the throat and put a sword there and said, wouldn't you like to be a Christian? We said, oh yes, I've been thinking about it for a long time. Now, he didn't do that, and for a very good reason, because when we feel we have been forced, we're going to do everything we can to sabotage the situation. Example. I think I told you last night that my wife and I have been married for about 53 years now. I can remember 54 years ago when I was a scared boy and I held a ring in my hand and I said to Ada Brown, ooh, ooh, will you marry me? And he said, yeah, might as well. I could have held a ring in one hand and a pistol in the other hand and said, you're going to marry me for your own good. Now, if she had married me at gunpoint, every meal she fixed for me, I'd have fed some of it to the dog first to see if he stayed alive, see? Because when you feel you've been forced, you'll do everything you can to sabotage the situation. And when it comes to the most important decision we'll ever make in our life, who we will serve, he wants a genuine decision from us, a genuine one, so that we won't try to sabotage it. Now, plenty of evidence of this in the Scripture. Revelation 3:20, behold, I stand at the door and knock. He's a gentleman. He knocks. If it were me, I would have said, behold, I stand at the door and I'm going to huff and puff and blow your house down. But he knocks. And if we hear his voice and open the door, he comes in and eats with us. See, isn't that great? He eats with us. I want you to keep that in your mind. He eats. Well, okay, go ahead. And he says of us, quoting from Isaiah in Matthew 12, a bruised reed he wouldn't break and smoking flax he wouldn't quench. Those are words of gentleness. A bruised reed he wouldn't break means he doesn't kick people when they're down. He picks them up and restores them just as he did you. Smoking flax he wouldn't quench means he looks for the slightest spark of hope in people and tries to fan it into flame. Just the way he did for you, you see. Boy, no force. And no blind ambition. Blind ambition is when you have a goal that you think is so good, and no matter what you have to do to achieve it, do it. Lie, cheat, and steal if you have to, because the goal is so good. No. You know, when Satan was tempting Jesus, took him up on that high mountain and in an instant showed him the kingdoms of the world with all of their splendor. I can see this moment. As Satan says, looks good, doesn't it, Jesus? Well, yeah, it does. I thought so. You came for this, didn't you, Jesus? Well, yes, I did. I thought so. You really want it, don't you, Jesus? Well, yeah, I do. I thought so. Well, I can get it for you wholesale. All you have to do is bow down worship me. It belongs to me. Come on, you can do it. You can do it. My way. But Jesus made an eternal decision at that moment. He says, it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and Him only. What's left after only? Shall you serve. And with that moment, he knew and decided that his godly goal can only be achieved by godly methods. He does not need us to, ask us to, or want us to do anything, even carnal, fleshly, to achieve his goals. The weapons of our warfare, folks, are not carnal. I've decided if the world can think it up, it ain't our method. But our methods are mighty to the pulling down of strongholds, the Bible tells us. Well, then he says in that same passage that he made himself of no reputation. For he emptied himself and made himself nothing. Now, don't misinterpret this and think that he made himself of bad reputation. No, of no reputation. There's a difference. Let me explain what that means. Have you ever been around anyone who was rich or famous or powerful? I mean, you were a bit intimidated and you tried hard to think of something profound to say, and all you can think of is the weather. Sure is pretty, isn't it? You know? Yeah, and you feel so dumb afterwards. Any of you know who Johnny Cash was? Okay. I interviewed him. He had made a public profession of faith. I was the editor and creator of a youth magazine. His pastor was a friend of mine. He said, I'll get you an interview. Wonderful. I'll never forget that day. I'm sitting in his plush Hendersonville, Tennessee office waiting for him to arrive. I had memorized my questions. For days, I had practiced my cool. And then he walks in. Hi, I'm Johnny Cash. I didn't realize he was that big. I lost it. Hi, Johnny. Oh, can I have your autograph? It's for my son. You know. When that interview was over, I felt so dumb. I thought, he puts his shoes on 1 foot at a time, like I do. Why was I so intimidated? Fame. Fortune. Now, here comes the Son of God. Whoa! Talk about intimidation. I mean, he could have spat on the ground and a little atomic explosion occurred. He could have carved birds, as one of the legends said, out of wood and turn it loose and watch it fly. Ooh, what he could have done. But instead, he made himself of no reputation. Why? So anyone would feel comfortable coming to him. How did he do that? Well, for a moment, imagine with me that you're God.
Give me one day, I can straighten this place out. And there's this ball of mud out in the middle of space called Earth. And a bunch of critters running around on it called people. And you happen to love them very much. And man, you want to tell them that, but they don't even speak your language. So, if he would have consulted with me, since I've had some experience in public relations, I just recommended he get up on the moon with about a $5,000 microphone, hang 2 billion-watt speakers out in space, say, hello world, this is God. Yeah, well, yeah, what? I love you, oh, do you? But let's say I'm negotiating with him, and he says, well, I've decided to have him born like everybody else. Well, okay.
Not a bad idea. But what you need to do, God, is you need to snap your fingers and create this huge hospital gleaming bright on the outside with a giant diamond on the top that would catch the rays of the sun, cast them over the countryside, and only have one person ever born there, your son. And then I could organize tours to go see it. And he says, well, actually, Erwin, appreciate the information and the advice. You always are giving me advice. Of course, telling me stuff I didn't know. But I've decided to have my son born in a barn. You're joking, aren't you? You're not joking. Look, God, I don't know if you're aware of this, but barns, you know, I was born on a farm. I know what barns are like, and they're not places for babies to be born. Unless they go moo afterward. Do you realize that this was not a birth that he could boast about? I was born in a barn. Where were you born, huh? When I was a kid, my mama used to say to me, Gail Erwin, were you born in a barn? And it was not a compliment. But if that wasn't enough, I mean, how do you write him a letter? What address? That wasn't enough. He had what I can only describe as questionable parents. What if the sweetest, purest 15-year-old, most scholars think Mary was about 15, suddenly shows up pregnant? Oh, man. Everyone's going, oh, no, where did we go wrong? Finally, someone gets the courage to ask her, all right, who did it? And she smiles sweetly and says, the Holy Spirit. Sure. Tell us another one. You know? Folks, I believe in a virgin birth. They didn't necessarily believe in a virgin birth back then. And, folks, this was social disaster. This was a talking point. Have you heard about his mother? If you're running for God, you don't want this on your record. But if that wasn't enough, he also had, as we've already mentioned, a very common name. You know, we're going to call him in our language Joshua, really. Well, the problem is there were Joshuas running around all over the place. If God would have checked with me, since I've had some experience in public relations, I would have recommended that he call his son something like, you know, Patrick. Just kind of has a ring to it, you know. But Joshua, you're joshing us, aren't you? But keep in mind, he was Emmanuel, God with us. But if that wasn't enough, he also had what I can only call a weak announcement. Now you may be thinking, come on, Erwin, they didn't have angels singing when I was born. How do you call that a weak announcement? Well, think with me for a second. If you ever go to London, be sure and go to the Tower of London. It is not a tower as we think of it, but it is history condensed for over 1,000 years, man. And one of the things they have there is the crown jewels of England. Now, once you see these things, man, let me tell you, you're going to hold all jewelry stores in contempt. You'll just walk by a jewelry store and go, as you pass by. At one time, they had in there a diamond the size of your fist. I looked at that and I thought, what would I do with that if I owned it? I don't have a place to keep it. Would I walk around Los Angeles with it in my pocket? Say to my friends, look what I had. They'd say, zing, look what you had. Now, play another game with me. Imagine that you're Mary or Joseph. Born to you is the greatest jewel ever to grace this earth, and you're holding him in your hands.
what are you going to do with him? Don't drop him. Where are you going to take him to grow up? What neighborhood do you want him to grow up in? They took him to Nazareth. Nazareth.
If you ever go to Israel, you'll go to Nazareth. Actually, you'll go through Nazareth. You don't know reason to stop there. Nathanael said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? But I appreciate this because I like the fact that you don't have to grow up in Beverly Hills to be something, you see. Man. Which also lets me know that he grew up in a bad neighborhood. One more thing I want to talk about with that week announcement. Do you realize who it came to first? It's the shepherds. Now, we have sanitized shepherds. We think every Jewish boy just dreamed of growing up to be a shepherd. No. Folks, how can I tell you this? See, we don't have what we would call a caste system in this country. But shepherds were the lowest critters on the face of this earth. They still are over in the Middle East, by the way. It's like a caste. You ask a sheep owner, and he will tell you they can never rise above that position. They were the lowest of the low. He had to come to them first. Otherwise, they would have known it's not for us. But with that one move, he was showing how wide his arms of love really are. Wow. And what could shepherds do? Go into town in the middle of the night? Well, you know, shepherds' reputation, they were kind of like your local friendly burglars. When they went through town, things tended to disappear. Can you hear them knocking on doors and yelling, he's been born! Joshua's been born! Someone says, all right already, we got 6 Joshuas in this block. We don't need another one. Someone else wakes up and says, who said that? Oh, it's just a burglar. A burglar. So you see, in terms of spin, that was a pretty bad announcement. And he did grow up in a bad neighborhood. But I hesitate to tell you this, but I think that you're able to handle it now. He was not handsome. Now you may be thinking, that's it, Irwin. I was with you till now. But I have his picture on my wall. He's the most beautiful red-headed Irishman I've ever seen. Well, folks, Isaiah tells us the truth about him. It says he had no form nor comeliness. Now, we don't use that word comely anymore, but it literally means handsomeness or beauty, that we should desire him. Now, here's another thing about that. The Greeks and the Romans created their own gods. And when you create your own gods, you make them idealized human beings. To this day, beauty is called the Greek goddess look. Handsomeness is called the Greek god look. Had Jesus come that way, the crowds would have thought, the Greek gods have visited us again. But he comes in a way he's so nondescript, Judas said, I'm going to have to point him out to you. You know, he could sit right here among us without our thinking, oh, he must be the Messiah. Look at the big M on his chest. Look at the blue tights and the flowing red cape. I like that, though, because I know how I feel around ridiculously handsome people. Jealous. But if that wasn't enough, folks, he owned nothing. That's not a very very big thing, is it, for somebody who's going to be the leader? Man, you want a guy, he's obviously a success. Look at him. And if you follow him, he'll share with you how to be successful like he is. You know, and they said, birds have nests, foxes have holes. I don't even have a place to lay my head. Well, I've already talked a little bit about about, you know, not being attached to the things of this world, but let me add something to it. First of all, when you purchase something, you've got two problems. You have to maintain it, takes time and energy. You have to protect it, takes time and energy. You can own just enough things that all your time and energy goes into maintaining and protecting your thing. And he who came to redeem people was not going to be fooled by things. But there's another problem. See, if you're rich, don't tell me. Because if I think you're rich, I get real friendly. Isn't that amazing how that shapes the way we react to people? If Bill Gates were here, every one of us would want to be close to him. Hi, Mr. Gates, my name is this, and my needs are these. So Jesus comes in a way that if you follow him, it'll be for the right reasons and not for greedy ones, you see. Oh, but that wasn't all. That wasn't enough. He also had a very strange advanced man. If I were forming the Gail Irwin Evangelistic Crusades Incorporated, I would want to send someone ahead of me, you know, who could impress people, you know, who could just pull his guitar out and have a crowd there, man, and get everybody organized, man. Sound like Johnny Cash if he wants to, you know. But John the Baptist, the original hippie, out in the desert wearing funny clothes, eating organic foods, yelling at people, repent, and when they do, he dunks them in water. But if that wasn't enough, he also had what I can only call a motley crew. So here is Jesus coming and forming a cabinet, if you please, of 12 men. If he would have just consulted with me, I could have helped him. I would have said, the first thing you need to do is go to the theological seminaries and get several professors who understand the theological ramifications of the problems that arise. Then you know to need to go to Hollywood and get someone with charisma who can command the attention of the crowds and explain to them what it was you meant when you said such and such. Then you need to go to Wall Street. That's not a good illustration anymore. And get 3 or 4 millionaires. You know, they're nice to have on the team. Then you need to go to Gold's Gym and get about 6 bodyguards because they'll crucify you around here if you're not careful. That's the way I'd put it together. What did he do? He went to the streets, got the strangest bunch you've ever seen. If you'd been walking 50 feet behind him, you'd have said, I smell fish. He had a zealot and a tax collector on the same team, which is kind of like having Saddam Hussein and George Bush on the same team. And some of them fellas had the awfulest accents you've ever heard in your whole life. And with that crew, he proposes to turn the world upside down. I love it. Because if he can work with them, he can work with me and you. But if that wasn't enough, he also died a very bad death. Now, we believe that, but we don't really believe it. You know what? I was reading in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, Paul's statement, the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness. And I thought, no, man, the cross. It's everywhere. It's on necklaces. It's on lapels. It's on bracelets. It's on rings. It's on earrings. It's behind altars, beautifully, or sometimes projected on screens now. Nice, pretty one. But otherwise, you know, beautifully polished wood or silver. It's on steeples everywhere, sometimes even neon lighted and revolving. The cross. It was one of those times the Lord whispered to my heart, Erwin, you don't understand the cross because people don't die on crosses nowadays. Oh, yeah. You see, if Jesus were to come today for the first time ever, especially to Texas, we'd treat him a lot better. We'd electrocute him or gas him or hang him. But that'd change some things. It would change our evangelism. Can you hear me saying, friend, have I got good news for you? My best friend just died in an electric chair for you. And if you'll believe that and take up your electric chair and follow him, you'll be saved. Get the man away from me. Huh? Our songs would change. At the electric chair, at the electric chair, where I first saw the light. There's room in the gas chamber for you. Now, we laugh at that, which proves the Bible. We're of Greek mental descent, and to the Greeks it was a laughing matter, foolishness. To the Jews, a stumbling block. But it is the power of God unto salvation. Would you say that Jesus did a pretty good job here of making himself of no reputation? Pretty good job, huh? But now we got a problem. It's a serious problem. You know, Jesus said some things that frankly bother me. I'm sorry, but they do. One of the things he said that bothers me is he said, as the Father has sent me, even so send I you. Oh boy. We got a problem here, see? I can't go back and be born in a barn. I was born on a farm, but it was a nice farmhouse. I can't go back and have questionable parents. My parents had been married for 2 years before I was born, so there. Common name, how many guys do you know named Gail? Weak announcement, listen, with my voice, I would have probably made my own announcement and it would not have been weak, I can promise you that. Bad neighborhood, I happen to have grown up in one, but that doesn't matter, make any difference to you. Moving right along here. There was a time I owned nothing, but me and the bank have cooperated on a house. If I had an advanced man, he'd have to be strange to take the job. I'm a one-man motley crew. If I died a bad death, you'd just say he deserved it. So I cannot necessarily repeat this, but I think I'll have my own list of those ways that God moves on me to make myself approachable to those that he's chosen for me to serve. Simple as that. Well, boy, let's try the 15-minute one again. Think we can do it? No, let's try for 5. That way we get a 15. Okay. All right, take a break, folks.
Thank you for listening to this message. If you have any questions, please contact us at area code 316-263-3804 or check us out on the web at www.calvarychapelwichita.org.